remember, since that day I have never been in the body really. Just a very delicate thread joins me with the body. And I am continuously surprised that somehow the whole must be willing me to be here. Because I am no more here with my own strength. I am no more here on my own. It must be the will of the whole to keep me here, to allow me to linger a little more on this source. Maybe the whole wants something to share with you through me. Since that day, the world is unreal. Another world has been revealed. When I say the world is unreal, I don't mean that these trees are unreal. These trees are absolutely real. But the way you see these trees is unreal. These trees are not unreal in themselves. They exist in God. They exist in absolute reality. But the way you see them, you never see them. You are seeing something else, a mirage. You create your own dream around you. And unless you become awake, you will continue to dream. The world is unreal because the world that you know is the world of your dreams. When dreams drop and you simply encounter the world that is there, then the real world. There are not two things, God and the world. God is the world if you have eyes, clear eyes, without any dreams, without any dust of the dreams, without any haze of sleep. If you have clear eyes, clarity, perceptiveness, there is only God. Then somewhere God is a green tree, and somewhere else God is a shining star, and somewhere else God is a cuckoo, and somewhere else God is a flower, and somewhere else a child, and somewhere else a river. Then only God is. The moment you start seeing, only God is. But right now, whatsoever you see is not the truth. It is a projected lie. That is the meaning of a mirage. And once you see, even for a single split moment, if you can see, if you can allow yourself to see, you will find immense benediction present all over. Everywhere, in the clouds, in the sun, on the earth. This is a beautiful world. But I am not talking about your world. I am talking about my world. Your world is very ugly. Your world is your world created by self. Your world is a projected world. You are using the real world as a screen and projecting your own ideas on it. When I say the world is real, the world is tremendously beautiful, the world is luminous with infinity, the world is light and delight, it is a celebration. I mean my world, or your world, if you drop your dreams. When you drop your dreams, you see the same world as any Buddha has ever seen. When you dream privately. Have you watched it? The dreams are private. You cannot share them even with your beloved. You cannot invite your wife to your dream, or your husband, or your friend. You cannot say, now, please come tonight in my dream. I would like to see the dream together. It is not possible. Dream is a private thing. Hence it is illusory. It has no objective reality. God is a universal thing. Once you come out of your private dreams, it is there. It has been always there. Once your eyes are clear, a sudden illumination. Suddenly, you are overflooded with beauty, grandeur, and grace. That is the goal. That is the destiny. Let me repeat. Without effort, you will never reach it. With effort, nobody has ever reached it. You will need great effort. And only then there comes a moment when effort becomes futile. But it becomes futile only when you have come to the very peak of it, never before it. When you have come to the very pinnacle of your efforts, all that you can do, you have done, then suddenly there is no need to do anything anymore. You drop the efforts. But nobody can drop it in the middle. It can be dropped only at the extreme end. So go to the extreme end if you want to drop it. Hence I go on insisting, make as much effort as you can. Put your whole energy and total heart in it. So that one day you can see, now effort is not going to lead me anywhere. And that day it will not be you who will drop the effort. It drops on its own accord. And when it drops on its own accord, meditation happens. Meditation is not a result out of your efforts. Meditation is a happening. When your efforts drop, suddenly meditation is there. The benediction of it, the blessedness of it, the glory of it. It is there like a presence, luminous, surrounding you and surrounding everything. It fills the whole earth and the whole sky. That meditation cannot be created by human effort. Human effort is too limited. That blessedness is so infinite. You cannot manipulate it. It can happen only when you are in a tremendous surrender. When you are not there, only then it can happen. When you are in no self, no desire, not going anywhere, when you are just here now, not doing anything in particular, just being, it happens. And it comes in waves. And the waves become tidal. It comes like a storm and takes you away into a totally new reality. But first you have to do all that you can do. And then you have to learn non-doing. The doing of the non-doing is the greatest doing. And the effort of effortless is the greatest effort. Your meditation that you create by chanting a mantra, or by sitting quiet and still and forcing yourself, is a very mediocre meditation. It is created by you. It cannot be bigger than you. It is homemade. And the maker is always bigger than the made. You have made it. sitting, forcing in a yoga posture, chanting Rama, 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 or anything, blah, 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 anything. You have forced the mind to become still. It is a forced stillness. It is not that quiet that comes when you are not there. It is not that silence which comes when you are almost non-existential. It is not that beatitude which descends on you like a dove. It is said when Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist in the Jordan River, God descended in him, our Holy Ghost descended in him like a dove. Yes, that is exactly so. When you are not there, peace descends in you, fluttering like a dove, reaches in your heart and abides there, and abides there forever. You are your undoing. You are the barrier. Meditation is when the meditator is not. When the mind ceases with all its activity, seeing that they are futile, then the unknown penetrates you, overwhelms you. The mind must cease for God to be. Knowledge must cease for knowing to be. You must disappear, you must give way. You must become empty. Then only you can be full. That night I became empty and became full. I became non-existential and became existence. That night I died and was reborn. But the one that was reborn has nothing to do with that which died. It is a discontinuous thing. On the surface it looks continuous, but it is discontinuous. The one who died, died totally. Nothing of him has remained. Believe me, nothing of him has remained. Not even a shadow. It died totally, utterly. It is not that I am just a modified rupa, transformed form of the old. No, there has been no continuity. That day of March, 21st March, the person who had lived for many, many lives, for millennia, simply died. Another being, absolutely new, not connected at all with the old, started to exist. Religion just gives you a total death. Maybe that's why the whole day previous to that happening, I was feeling some urgency like death, as if I am going to die. And I really died. I have known many other deaths, but they were nothing compared to it. They were partial deaths. Sometimes the body died. Sometimes a part of the mind died. Sometimes a part of the ego died. But as far as the person was concerned, it remained. Renovated many times, decorated many times, changed a little bit here and there, but it remained. The continuity remained. That night, the death was total. It was a date with death and God simultaneously. Now this sutra, The Buddha said, look up to heaven and down on earth, and they will remind you of their impermanency. Look about the world and it will remind you of its impermanency. But when you gain spiritual enlightenment, you shall then find wisdom. The knowledge thus attained leads you anon to the way. Look up to heaven and down on earth, and they will remind you of their impermanency. Look. You don't look. You never look. Before you look, you have an idea. You never look in purity. You never look unprejudiced. You always carry some prejudice. You always carry some opinion, ideology, scripture, your own experience or others' experiences, but you always carry something in the mind. You are never naked with reality. And when Buddha says, look up to heaven and down on earth, he means look with a naked eye, with no coatings of opinions, ideas, experiences, borrowed or otherwise. Have you seen a naked eye? As far as humanity is concerned, it is very rare to come across a naked eye. All eyes are so much dressed up. Somebody has a Christian eye, somebody has a Hindu eye, somebody has a Mohammedan eye. They look differently. When a Mohammedan reads Gita, he never reads the same thing that a Hindu reads in it. When a Jaina reads the Gita, he reads something else again. A Hindu can read the Bible, but he will never read that which a Christian reads. The Bible is the same. From where this difference comes? The difference must be coming from the eye. The difference must be coming from the mind. Have you ever read a single page of a book without bringing your mind in it, without corrupting it by your mind, by your past, without interpreting it? Have you ever looked at anything in life? If not, then you have not looked at all. Then you don't have real eyes. You have just holes, not eyes. The eye has to be receptive, not aggressive. When you have a certain idea in the eye, in your mind, it is aggressive. It immediately imposes itself on things. When you have an empty eye, naked, undressed, not Christian, not Hindu, not communist, just pure look, innocent, primal innocence. Innocence as an animal's eye has, or a child, a newborn child, a just born child, looks around. He has no ideas. What is what? What is beautiful and what is ugly? He has no ideas. That primal innocence has to be. Only then, what Buddha says, you will be able to see that. You have been looking in life, but you have not come to see that all is impermanence. Everything is dying. Everything is decaying. Everything is on a death procession. People are standing in a death queue. Look around. Everything rushing towards death. Everything is fleeting, momentary, flux-like. Nothing seems to be of eternal value. Nothing seems to abide. Nothing seems to hold. Nothing seems to remain. Everything just goes on and on and on. and goes on changing. What else is a dream? Buddha says, this life, this world that you live in, that you are surrounded with, that you have created around yourself, is but a dream, impermanent, temporary. Don't make your abode there, otherwise you will suffer. Because nobody can be contented with the temporary. By the time you think it is in your hands, it is gone. By the time you think you have possessed it, it is no more there. You struggle for it. By the time you achieve it, it has disappeared. The beauty is fleeting. Love is fleeting. Everything in this life is fleeting. You are running to catch shadows. They look real. By the time you have arrived, they prove mirages. Look up to heaven and down on earth, and they will remind you of their impermanency. Look about the world, and it will remind you of its impermanency. It is one of the most foundational principles of Gautama the Buddha, that one should become aware of the impermanent world we are surrounded with. Then immediately you will be able to understand why Buddha calls it a dream, a maya, illusion. In the East, our definition of truth is that which abides forever. And of untruth, that which is there this moment and next moment is not there. Untruth is that which is temporary, momentary, impermanent. And truth is that which is, always is, has been, will be. Behind these fleeting shadows, find the eternal. Penetrate to the eternal, because there can be bliss only with the eternal. Misery only with the momentary. But when you gain a spiritual enlightenment, that's why I was reminded of my own experience and I talked about it to you. But when you gain a spiritual enlightenment, you shall then find wisdom. Wisdom cannot be found through scriptures. It is an experience. It is not knowledge. Wisdom is not knowledge. You cannot gather it from others. You cannot borrow it. It is not information. You cannot learn it from the scriptures. There is only one way to become wise, and that is to enter into a live experience of life. Something is said by Buddha, you hear it. Something I say, you hear it. But you don't become wise by hearing it. It will become knowledge. You can repeat it. You can repeat it even in a better way. You can become very skillful, efficient in repeating it. You can say it in a better language. But you don't have the experience. You have never tasted the wine yourself. You have simply seen some drunkard moving, wobbling on the road, fallen in a gutter. You have simply watched a drunkard, how he moves, how he stumbles. But you don't know what the experience is. You will have to become a drunkard. There is no other way. You can watch 1,001 drunkards and you can collect all information about them, but that will be from the outside. And the experience is inner. that will be from without, and you will collect it as a spectator. And the experience cannot be attained by seeing. It can be attained only by being. Now, the modern world has become very obsessed by seeing. The modern world is the spectator's world. People are sitting for hours in the movie houses, just watching, doing nothing. In the West, people are glued to their chairs for hours, 6 hours, 8 hours even, just sitting before their TVs. You listen somebody singing, and you see somebody dancing, and you see somebody making love. That's why people are so much interested in pornography. But you are a spectator. The modern man is the falsest man that has ever existed on the earth. And his falsity consists in that he thinks that he can know by just seeing, just by being a spectator. People are sitting for hours seeing hockey matches, volleyball matches, cricket matches. For hours. When you are going to play yourself, when you are going to love somebody, when you are going to dance and sing and be. This is a very borrowed life. Somebody dances for you. Maybe you can enjoy it. But how can you know the beauty of dance? Unless you dance, it is something inner. What happens when a person is dancing? What happens to his innermost core? Nijinsky, one of the greatest dancers, used to say that there come moments when he disappears. Only the dance remains. Those are the peak moments. When the dancer is not there and only the dance is, that's what Buddha is saying. When the self is not there. Now Nijinsky is moving into an ecstasy. And you are just sitting there watching the movement. Of course, though the movement are beautiful, Nijinsky's movements have a grace, a tremendous beauty. But it is nothing compared to what he is feeling inside. His dance is a beauty. Even when you are just an spectator, but nothing compared to what is happening inside him. He used to say that there are moments when gravitation disappears. I can understand, because I have come across the feeling myself when gravitation disappears. And it was only for moments that gravitation disappeared for me. Now I have lived for years without gravitation. I know what he means. Even scientists were very much puzzled, because there were moments in Nijinsky's dance when he will leap and jump, and those leaps were tremendous, almost impossible leaps. A man cannot leap that way. The gravitation does not allow. And the most beautiful and amazing part was when Nijinsky will be coming back from the leap, he will come so slowly that is impossible. He will come so slowly as if a leaf falling from a tree, very slowly, very slowly, very slowly. It is not possible. It is against the physical law. It is against physics. The gravitation does not make any exceptions, not even for a Nijinsky. And he was asked again and again, what happens? How you fall so slowly? Because it is not within your power to control. The gravitation pulls you. He said it does not happen always, only rarely, when the dancer disappears. then sometimes I am also puzzled, surprised. Not only you, I see myself coming so slowly, so gracefully, and I know that the gravitation does not exist in that moment. He must be functioning in another dimension, where the physical law does not exist, where another law starts working, that spiritualists call the law of levitation. And it seems absolutely rational and logical to have both the laws, because each law has to be counterbalanced by another law in opposite direction. If there is light, there is darkness. If there is life, there is death. If there is gravitation, there must be levitation that pulls you up. There must be ways when a person is pulled up. There are stories, especially the story about Muhammad. He went to heaven with his physical body, not only with physical body, with his horse. Sitting on the horse, simply went to heaven, upwards. It looks absurd. Mohammedans have not been able to prove it, but the meaning is clear. The story may not have exactly happened, but the meaning is clear. The meaning is to be understood. It is very symbolical. It simply says that there is a law of levitation. And if Muhammad cannot be pulled by levitation, then who will be pulled? He is the right person. A person who exists not. The ego is under gravitation. The no ego is not under gravitation. A weightlessness arises. Nijinsky went mad because he was simply a dancer and he never knew anything about meditation, ecstasy, enlightenment. That became a trouble for him. If you don't understand and if you don't move with awareness and suddenly you stumble upon something which cannot be explained by ordinary laws, you will go mad. Because you will be disturbed by it. It is so weird. It is so eerie. You cannot explain it. You start getting disturbed by it. He himself started getting disturbed by the phenomenon. Finally, it was so staggering. It disturbed his whole mind. God is very destructive. If you don't go rightly, you will be destroyed, because God is fire. Many people go mad if they don't move rightly. If they don't move under right guidance, they can go mad. It is not a child's play. One has to understand. And God, if he happens like an accident, you will not be able to absorb. Your old world will be shattered and you will not be able to create a new order, a new understanding. Because for the new understanding, you will need new concepts, a new framework, a new gestalt. That is the whole meaning of finding a master. It is not just gullibility that people become attached to masters. It has a scientific base to it. Moving into the unknown is a tremendous risk. One should move with somebody who has already moved into it. One should move hand in hand with somebody who knows the territory. Otherwise the thing can happen so shatteringly that you will be at a loss. Many people go mad if they don't know that somebody's help is needed. Somebody is needed like a midwife. You will be born, but somebody will be needed to watch over it. His very presence will be helpful. You can relax. The midwife is there, the doctor is there. You can relax. They don't do much. You can ask Dr. Ajit Saraswati, they don't do much. What they can do? But their very presence relaxes the woman who is going under labor. She knows the doctor is there, the nurse is there, the midwife is there, everything is okay. She goes, she relaxes. She is no more fighting. She knows if something goes wrong, people are around who will put it right. She can relax. She can trust. The same happens to a disciple. It is a process of rebirth. A master is needed. But from the master, don't go on collecting knowledge. From the master, take hints and move into experience. I talk about meditation, you can do two things. You can collect whatever I say about meditation. You can compile it. You can become a great knowledgeable person about meditation. Because every day I go on talking about meditation from different dimensions, in different ways. You can collect all that. You can get a PhD from any university. But that is not going to make you wise unless you meditate. So whatsoever I am saying, try it in life. While I am here, don't waste time in collecting knowledge that you can do without me, that you can do in a library. While I am here, take a jump, a quantum leap into wisdom. Experience these things I am saying to you. But when you gain spiritual enlightenment, you shall then find wisdom. Wisdom is only through one's own experience. It is never from anybody else. Wisdom always happens as a flower opens. Just like that, when your heart opens, you have a fragrance. That fragrance is wisdom. You can bring a plastic flower from the market. You can deceive neighbors. I used to live near Mullah Nasruddin once. I used to see him every day pouring water into a pot which was hanging in his window with beautiful flowers. I watched him many times. Whenever he will be pouring water, there was no water. The pot was empty. I could see that there is no water and the pot is empty, but he will pour twice every day religiously. I asked Nasruddin, what you are doing? You don't have any water. And you go on pouring it, which is not there. And I have been watching you for many days. He said, don't get disturbed. These flowers are plastic flowers. They don't need water. Plastic flowers don't need water. They are not alive. They don't need soil. They are not alive. They don't need fertilizers. They are not alive. They don't need any manure. They are not alive. Real flowers are like wisdom. Wisdom is like real flowers. Knowledge is plastic. That's why it is cheap. It is very cheap. You can get it for nothing because it is borrowed. Experience is a radical change in your life. You cannot be the same. If you want to become wise, you will have to go through transformations, million and one transformations. You will have to pass through fire. Only then, whatsoever ugly is there and useless is there will be burnt, and you will come out as pure gold. The knowledge thus attained leads you anon to the way, and the wisdom only. The knowledge thus attained through one's own experience, through one's own enlightening experience, through one's own satori, samadhi, makes you capable to fall in tune with the way. The Buddha calls it Dhamma, Tao. Then you are in a harmony. What Pythagoras calls harmonia. Then you are suddenly not there. Only the La is there, the Dhamma is there, the way is there, or call it God is there. Then you are simply with the whole. You go with it wherever it goes. Then you don't have any goal of your own. Then the whole's destiny is your destiny. Then there is no anxiety, no tension. Then one is immensely relaxed. In fact, one is so relaxed that one is not. The ego is nothing but accumulated tensions through lives. When you are totally relaxed and you look within, there is nobody. It is simple purity, emptiness, vastness. The Buddha said, you should think of the four elements of which the body is composed. Each of them has its own name, and there is no such thing there known as ego. As there is really no ego, it is like unto a marriage. Buddha says, ego is just a concept, an idea. It does not exist in reality. When a child is born, he is born without any eye. By and by he learns it. By and by he learns that there are other people and I am separate from them.